Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Bowlers Union podcast. We are really excited with today's guest, arguably the best quick bowler of all time. We have Dale Steyn joining us, as well as Keith.
Welcome, Dale. I'm just going to start off by saying thanks. Thanks again for being on. I've just got five quick fire questions for you to answer. And this is just, if you had to pick one, not what you have now and picking the other, but what you would have if you had to pick one out of these five questions. Seam or swing?
Swing.
Pace or bounce?
Pace.
Back of the hand slower ball or knuckleball?
Oh, knuckleball.
Nick off or bold?
Nick off.
Good bouncer or a good Yorker?
Good bouncer.
Okay, so swing. So you had an amazing wrist and swung it pretty much every ball. Did you attempt to try and move the ball off the wicket, or were you just constantly looking for movement in the air?
A bit of both. I think that coming from South Africa, there was always a lot on offer off the surfaces. So I try to control what I could control through the air, and I let the surface kind of take care of the rest. So if I could get the ball in a good area and I was able to swing it through the air like super late, I think that's the key thing, is that if you can get it to go late, and everyone's like, how do you get it to go late? That's a whole other debate. But yeah, if you can get it to go late, then generally what happens is that when it hits the deck, everything happens so much faster. And just that little bit of movement, you know, whether it's all you need to do is just move it this much. And that's the difference between hitting the middle of the bat and finding an edge or going through the gap. That's all you're really looking for. So yeah, I try and utilize what I can through the air. And then in South Africa, like, yeah, the decks do a lot here, you know. So you kind of let the pitch do the rest. But yeah, when you start to travel to places like India and Sri Lanka, you know, there's not a lot of surf, not a lot of purchase off the pitches. So, you know, swing through the air becomes incredibly critical. Like, can you reverse swing it? Can you shape it and swing it late? So that's why I always enjoyed the swinging ball more than a seaming ball.
And then pace over bounce. Obviously, you were a very, very quick bowler. I'm guessing you didn't find the need for any bounce.
No, I thought bounce was like, it looked pretty, you know, like when the keeper's catching the ball up, yeah, and it looks really nice. But I wanted to go under the bat. Like, I felt like that was the more difficult thing to face, you know. Ducking into a bouncer, not knowing when to duck, when to play the pull, was kind of more up my alley, you know. If you're playing in the Wacker in Perth, it just seems like it's so true. Guys can leave on length. The bounce, you kind of get yourself into a bit of trouble with that bounce. I always wanted the ball to go, I wanted it to move really quickly through the air and then do like nothing off the deck. I like wanted it to bounce this much. Like, I wanted to go under the bat. I want to hit guys on the ankle, you know, that kind of thing. And because I think we played a lot of cricket like in the subcontinent, you know, so it was like, that's how you want to take your wickets. You want to attack the stumps, LBW bold, caught behind, with as little bounce as possible. And when you go to places like Australia and there's big bounce, I wasn't as successful there.
Interesting. With the next one, back of the hand, slower ball and knuckleball. Did you choose back of the hand?
No, knuckle.
Knuckleball. Yep. With you saying attack the stumps, it seems that, well, we spoke to Kyle Abbott last week, which will be out in a few weeks' time. He was the same about attacking the stumps, never wanting the batsman to leave the ball, really. So nick off or bold, you preferred to have batters bold?
I mean, I like to get batters bold, don't get me wrong, but there's nothing better than watching the ball shape out your hand. The guy goes to play a nice forward defense, and you involve other people in the dismissal, which is something that I enjoyed. You know, I wanted my keepers, I wanted my slips to be involved in the game. You know, if I had to say bold, then it becomes quite a selfish thing, you know, because then it's like you take everyone else out of the equation. It's just me, the ball, and the batter, and which is fair enough. But like, I always wanted to work well with my keeper. I wanted to work well with my slip. So yeah, I love the ball to find the edge and go to first slip and see you know, Graham Smith with bucket hands there, or Hashim Amla, or Avi de Villiers take a magical catch. You know, that's I wanted to involve other people in part of the dismissal.
And good bouncer or good Yorker? You choose bouncer, was it?
I would choose a bouncer. I mean, I like a Yorker. There's nothing wrong with a Yorker, but there's also nothing wrong with, like, the thing about pace is that you're scared of pace, you know? So, like, anybody you can bowl a Yorker, a spinner can bowl a Yorker, but, you know, no one, not everybody can bowl a bouncer, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the thing, that's the fear factor that everyone loves, you know? The night before a big game or something, I want guys to be lying in bed there thinking to themselves, oh, shit, tomorrow I've got to face this guy, and there's a chance that he's going to take my grill off my helmet, you know, not thinking, oh, he's going to hit my toe and that's fine. Like, anybody can deal with a broken toe. No one wants the ball. Yeah. In this period. And there's not many people that can do that other than the fast men. So, you know, it's got to be a bouncer.
That's great to hear all this. Can I ask, you mentioned about the South African wickets doing a lot. Do you find they did more or less than over in the UK?
Yeah, I think they do way more, to be honest with you. I think everyone talks about the UK wickets doing a lot, but, like, I found that the UK wickets are really good to bat on. Like, you know, and if you look at the scores, you often find many English players, like, you see big scores, 300s, 200s, that kind of thing, and individual scores, I mean, you know. South Africa, that is, you don't ever see that. There's always something in a pitch here in South Africa. So I think that the pitches that do the most in the world is certainly in South Africa. And that's why we've got such a great history of fast bowlers, because, you know, everybody wants to be a fast bowler because it just seems to do a lot more here. And why I think that our batters are very technically well-equipped, as well as the English batters, you know, the guys that are able to have good techniques, play the ball really late under their eyes, soft hands, Hashim, good technique, De Villiers, Callis. You know, we find that we get the best of everyone here in South Africa because of the conditions.
I agree. And what about the ball? Did you like bowling with the Dukes over here, or do you prefer the Kookaburra?
I didn't mind a Duke, but it took me quite a lot to get used to the Duke, because the Duke is quite similar to an SG ball, in terms of, like, it's nothing compared to a Kookaburra. A Kookaburra is a completely different cricket ball. And I found that the SG was a ball that you tried to get reverse swing ready as quickly as possible. You wanted to get one side scuffed up and work on the one side so that you can get the ball to reverse. Whereas in England, you're kind of waiting for that lacquer to get off so that you can shape the ball so it can swing both ways, you know, like conventional swing. And that kind of confused me at times, because I was like, well, they're almost the same ball, but one way you're trying to get it to go conventional and the other way you're trying to get it to reverse. And I never quite knew, like, how to hold it or, like, what I should do with it. And I found that it often did quite a lot. And it was only until I was there at Hampshire with Carl Abbott that I started to actually bowl a lot more wobble seam and almost, like, three-quarter seam, cross-the-seam kind of stuff, because I found the ball did way too much for me. And it was just – guys, it looked beautiful. Guys were playing and missing, but they were missing it by, you know, a foot. And I was like, well, that's useless. Like, and that's why I admire a guy like Jimmy, because he's been so good with it, you know. And he's been equally as good with a Kookaburra. But with a Duke ball, him and Broadie, they've just set new levels in terms of, like, how to bowl with that ball. I just could never do it. I probably didn't bowl enough with it.
Yeah.
Go on, Keith, you go.
I was just going to say, I think maybe it's just the fact that you're that next level up that people are missing the ball by a foot.
I wouldn't mind that.
sorry, mate.
So in terms of the wobble scene then, because obviously this, it feels like it's relatively new, or at least the amount of attention it gets is through the roof at the minute. If you were starting your career again, would you bowl more that, or would you still stick with your stock ball as an away swinger?
No, I'll definitely still stick with the stock ball as an away swinger. And I'll quickly tell you a quick story, because the South Africans recently, about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, a lot of them were bowling wobble seam. I think they had one or two tours to England, and they were all practicing bowling wobble seam. And where did they go? They went to India. Of all places, they went to India. And the Indian seamers outshone the South Africans by a country mile. Mohammed Shami, Siraj, there may have been Jasprit Bumrah. And the reason why they outshone the guys is not because just because of the bowling, but our batters couldn't handle a swinging ball. And when I spoke to some of the batters, they were just saying that all the South African bowlers were running in the nets and they were bowling wobble seam. And they were practicing wobble seam. The batters were just getting wobble seam, wobble seam, wobble seam. And then they got into the games and they played against India and it was conventional swing and it was just cleaning them up, you know.
All right.
And it just shows you, like, you've got to be able to marry both really well. And I think conventional swing is generally the right way to do it. And then use wobble. Well, I would use wobble as like an alternative, like, kind of delivery, you know, but never lose your swing. Like, once you lose that, it's really difficult to get back. I can teach anybody the wobble seam. It's kind of hold it like this, bowl it, and good luck. But having a wonderful wrist that gets behind the ball, much like Jimmy, you know, Stark, whoever these other guys are, that Trent Bolt, that's not an easy thing to coach, you know. That's almost like a gift. So don't lose it, you know. I would say harness that and keep that.
It's great to hear you say that, because and obviously we've interviewed a few bowlers, none not the greatest bowler of all time until today, but the wobble seems obviously really popular. But using Kyle Abbott, for example, he's a big guy. He's a huge guy. So I feel like if he can almost get away with it if it doesn't do a lot, particularly, if you know what I mean, especially in the UK. Whereas let's say for a young bowler coming up who isn't of a professional standard, or even some young pros who don't have the physical gifts of someone like Kyle, if they just think they can bowl wobble seam and they come on a flat one, or even if they're in the subcontinent, like you've said, and they don't find it nipping, then you're kind of stuck, aren't you, a bit?
Yeah, massively. Yeah, no, and that's exactly what happens, is that if you really want to test yourself at the highest level, most of the pitches that you're going to be playing on are pretty flat, so they're not really going to offer a lot off the deck, so you've got to be able to do it through the air. And you will get a lot of decks that kind of do it, so it's almost like a contradictory thing. But if you go into India, if you go into Sri Lanka, if you go into Bangladesh or Pakistan, where we all want to go and play our cricket, it's not going to be nipping off the deck there. You know, you've got to be able to do what Wasim and Waka did back in the day. You've got to be able to do what other bowlers have done to be successful in those places, and that's move the ball through the air. Kyle Abbott obviously plays a lot of his cricket now for Hampshire, and he was a traditional swing bowler that went there, and I think he found it difficult at the start too. He was also just doing conventional swing, and then he found his rhythm. He was then starting to use the crease a lot more and bowl with the wobble seam. And then obviously having somebody like Fidel Edwards on the other side who was swinging it, because he would be shaping it, it helped him too, you know. So you're working in that partnership there with whoever's bowling from the other side. But Kyle just adapted to the conditions that he was given. And he was, when you're only playing county cricket, then that's the only thing that you have to worry about. Once you step up to the highest level, you gotta be able to have all the tricks, you know.
Yeah, and that's something I think for anyone, any young bowler listening, I think it's so important. We talked about it before with a bowling coach. We've had Graham Welch on before. I think it's really important for young bowlers to learn how to swing it, get the wrist behind it, good wrist position, and then it's probably easier to learn how to wobble it from there rather than you knowing how to kind of get it down there and hoping it wobbles to then try and get them to learn how to swing it. It's a lot harder doing it the other way around.
Yeah, so much harder, so much harder. Like, you want to find kids that have got good wrists, and you want to just make sure that they stick with that. And like you say, you know, you can coach someone to just hold the ball slightly differently, but to get your wrist like in the right positions, you know, that's a true skill.
So, in what order did you learn these skills? So, were you naturally really quick and fast twitch and you had to work on the wrist, or did you always swing it and then put on a yard of pace, or you know were you just lucky to have both gifts?
I was lucky that I had both gifts, and I think I was also lucky that where I grew up playing cricket, a lot of the cricketers weren't very good. Okay, so it sounds really bad, okay, but I became a bit of a bully, you know, essentially from a young age. Like, I was a teenager, like 14, 15 years old, playing club cricket. No other kids were playing club cricket, men's club cricket. And I was then playing, and all of a sudden I was starting to play with a different ball to the balls that we use in school. The balls that we're using in clubs were a little bit more expensive. You know, they would do slightly more for longer than the balls that we were doing in school. I was also playing against grown men, and, you know, I was knocking their helmets off on weekends and knocking their poles out of the ground, which gave me a lot of confidence. So when I played against kids that were my age, like my level, it was like I was just two, three steps ahead. So by the time I got to like my about 19, 20, when I started to look at more professional cricket, like I already developed those skills. Like I'd fast tracked those skills. I think it was just because of who I was playing against, you know. And then I had to really try and zone in, and because now I'm starting to play against better batters and guys that have got better techniques, guys that have got better what is it called? Patience. They're leaving me a little bit longer. They're not as scared. They see this on a more regular basis. So now I have to start practicing all the other things that come into what big boy cricketers or international cricketers need, which is being able to hit a length consistently for a very, very, very long time with small minor skills, you know. And then that's when I started to practice those things, which meant consistency became key. I was hanging around guys like Polly. He's one of the most consistent ears. I saw the other day, I watched, was on YouTube, the guy was bowling in his 300th ODI with an economy rate of 3.27. I'm like, who does that, you know? Yeah, you know, so I guess like when I was growing up, I was playing against a lot of guys that weren't as good as me. And then I just had a lot of confidence by the time I hit like my early 20s, right. Which was pace and swing, yeah.
Well, from what I've seen, it was funny enough, we were obviously looking forward to having you on, and on Instagram, I was just scrolling through on our cricket page, and we get a lot of stuff up, and there were two different young kids, probably, I think they were Indian kids, who had been coached to run up and bowl exactly like yourself, and I forgot to record it, but they idolise your action, and a lot of people want to bowl exactly like you. I think me and Chris definitely would as well. Were there any bowlers that you looked up to growing up?
Yeah. You know, initially when I was growing up, I didn't really have, I must be honest, I didn't have a TV at home or anything like that. And we had a TV, but we didn't have like the satellite TV that everybody has today. So I wasn't able to watch as many games or see as many cricketers. So my idols growing up were the ones that I knew, the South Africans. So it was like Alan Donald, Jonty Rhodes. Those were like my two guys. And by the time I got to about 20, I started to like identify a few more cricketers that I started to like really resonate with. And Brett Lee was one of them. In 2003, he was just absolutely like, he was a machine in the World Cup in South Africa. And Australia won that World Cup. And I was actually a dressing room attendant at oh, wow. SuperSport Park. Yeah. For the teams. So I met a lot of the guys and everything. And, you know, by the time I really started to put my stuff in together, and I need to remember what order it goes in. But when I would stand at the top of my mark, I'd imagine myself as Shaib Akhtar, like running in with that aggression, you know, and the long run up, you know. My run up wasn't super long, but it was longer at one stage. And then as I got into my run up, I imagined myself as being Brett Lee, where I was just like zone in focus, you know, absolute focus. Everything was tight. Everything was just like athlete to the T, you know. And then when I got into my gather, I imagined myself as Alan Donald, because he just had the most poetic, beautiful, I thought, beautiful action. You know, just a lovely gather and jump. And then as I let the ball go, I wanted to have the control and consistency of Sean Pollock or Glenn McGrath. So that was my thinking, that I was standing at the top of my mark and I'm like, I'm Shaib Akhtar. And I'm going, and I'm like, now I'm Brett Lee, Alan Donald, Sean Pollock, you know. And then through years of just doing that, I eventually became myself, you know, where I wasn't thinking about those things anymore. But like, yeah, these are the guys that I kind of like absolutely idolized. And then I try to involve them into my action and my bowling. And whether it be my thought process or my run up or whatever it is, I needed them to get me to where I wanted to be.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Some great bowlers to pick things off, though, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're not shit. You know, they're all pretty good. So,
yeah. Like, you know, I think coaches sometimes are scared to tell young players to go and copy someone a bit. Everyone, you know, coaches always say, oh, you have to be yourself. You're unique. And obviously, of course, everyone is, but that doesn't mean you can't copy your favorite bowler's run up and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's how you learn, isn't it? In the garden, playing and figuring things out.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, there's a difference between copying and doing something that might be bad for your body, essentially. You know, like I wouldn't suggest that everyone try and bowl like Lasith Malinga, you know, if he's your hero. It's not exactly good for the old back.
No.
But you know what? There's nothing wrong with when you're running in thinking that the moment you let go of that slow ball Yorker or that perfect Yorker that you are Lasith Malinga. You know, get into that mental space that this is what this person does, you know, tiger focus, like when it comes to golf or whatever it is. That's what you want, but also be yourself. You know, like when I look at my action, I look at my run up, it looks absolutely nothing like Shaib or Brett Lee or Alan Donald or Polly. But in my mind, I was all of those men in one. And yeah, I mean, I would strongly suggest that people enjoy their heroes and copy them, because it definitely makes you better. But at the end of the day, also try and be who you are, because you are unique in your own sense, you know, and you're only going to be the best of who you are, instead of trying to be somebody else, you know. But it's very important that you take the good cues from other people, because it's worked for them, it might help you.
Totally. So can we talk about your action for a bit? Because, yeah, in terms of your run-up, how quick did that feel to you? Because it looks quick when you watch it. Luckily, I've not faced you. But watching you run in, it's definitely on the higher end, would you say, compared to a lot of other bowlers? And, yeah, was that deliberate? Was that a Brett Lee inspiration, was it? Or Shoaib Akhtar, you said?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit of Shoaib at the top of my mark, and then Brett Lee as I got into, like, the rhythm. I wanted beautiful rhythm. You know, and one thing that I've probably neglected to say is that I also wanted it to look pretty. You know, like I'm a bit of an artist. I like to draw. I love music, and I like everything to have like a nice flow and a nice rhythm to it. You know, and I wanted my cricket to look much the same. So when I ran in, I wanted it to feel good, and be easy on the eye and easy on the body. So I worked really hard at that, because when I was younger, I was all over the place. You know, so. It took a long time, but yeah, I wanted it to be very easy, very flowy. And when it comes to run up, it's so important that, like, I got really good advice from a coach named Richard Pybus, where, you know, he said, not even the best cars in the world, like not Formula One cars, Ferraris, it doesn't matter. They all have to take off in first gear, you know, and your run up is much the same. You know, you want to be at the back of your mark. You want to take off in first gear, get into second, get into third, get into fourth, hit cruise control, and by the time you hit your gather and you're letting the ball go, you're in fifth or sixth gear or whatever it is that you want to be at. But tomorrow, if you're in a test match and you wake up, you might not have a sixth gear available for you just yet, you know? So it's important to be able to gear down and work in fourth and fifth and not force anything until you're good to go. And then you step back into sixth. And I listened to him, and then I through bowling, I started to understand what he meant by that. And it can mean anything for anybody, really. But, like, that's how you start to figure out the pace in which you need to run up and get from A to B, really. And then the one other thing that I try and tell a lot of people that I coach, because I coach these days, is I think that everyone's run up has got a certain speed, much like trains do on a train track. And if you run up too quickly, like a train, if a train can only go a certain speed, say it's 100 kilometers an hour on a train track, if you try and go at 110, that train's going to start to wobble and it's going to derail. And by the time it gets to its destination, shit's going to go pear-shaped. And bowling's much the same. If you stand at the top of your mark and you start sprinting in faster than your run-up is actually allowed to run up in, by the time you get to your gather, your left arm is going to be working. If you're a right-arm bowler, your left arm is going to be working too hard. Your head's going to be wobbling. Everything's going to be out of sync. So you really need to find what it is that your speed is to work on that train track, so to speak, so that you don't derail, so that everything kind of works together and flows. And the only way you kind of figure it out is by bowling, you know, doing it over and over and over again.
Yeah, I think that's 100% correct in what you've just said there. I unfortunately, I've only got two gears, first and second, mate.
And that's fine too, you know, that's absolutely fine. If that's all you got, like...
No, I totally understand. As soon as everyone has an optimum speed they can run in at and still have the traction almost to hit the deck hard and before things go pear-shaped. I was going to ask you, actually, and I saw this came on Instagram again. It was you talking about maybe you weren't, you know, when you were young, you weren't trying to be a cricketer. You didn't, it kind of happened more than what you thought it would do, but you were just wanting to skate. Was it skateboard, basically?
Yeah, it was skateboarding. Yeah. I picked up, started skateboarding when I was about 13, roughly around the same age that I started to become really good at cricket. And I just absolutely loved it. And I felt like now today, like the two and two ran really well together. Like a lot of the things that I learned from skateboarding, like the resilience side, the ability to keep picking yourself up every time you fall, you know, to land a difficult trick, to have the vision to be able to see yourself doing that trick, to then putting that into a cricket perspective where I stand at the top of my mark and I can visualize being able to get a batter out, like landing the ball on off stump and moving it away, you know, that visualization, that are all, I picked that up all from skateboarding. Like the amount of times that you fall in skateboarding is way more than the amount of times that you land a trick. So cricket is exactly the same. The amount of balls that you have to bowl before you take a wicket, and, you know, is a lot, you know. So skateboarding and cricket are almost exactly the same. But the thing about skateboarding was that I enjoyed it. I could do it anytime I wanted. You know, at 11 o'clock at night, I was a young teenager and I was full of energy. If I felt like skateboarding, I grabbed my board, I went outside and I was skating in the streets and I could do what I wanted. Cricket, you can only do it at a certain time with other people. So that was the thing that I loved about it. And then I got really good at it. And I was like, well, should I pursue this? Should I make this a career? And then they started paying me to play cricket. And I was like, oh, I'll bugger it. I'm going to do this instead.
fair enough. It's interesting hearing you sort of talk about the arty side of, you know, and the movement side of bowling, because I don't think, again, it's an area that really gets talked about. And I loved your analogy a minute ago about the train track and run-up speed. Again, that's not something particularly it gets mentioned, although there's a few South African bowlers now that have talked about timing their run-up. Abbo mentioned it, didn't he? Did you do anything like that?
Not really. I thought it was more, I wanted to go again on feel. You know, that was big for me. But at the same time, I thought it was important to, you know, if you've got a good feel, if you've done it many, many times, you will know, like, what it feels like. Like, with your eyes closed, you should be able to tell, okay, I should be hitting the crease now, and I should be letting go of the ball roughly around now. That's all feel. And some guys like to time it, but I always felt like if you're relying on a timer, then you're relying on like something that is outside of who you are. Like you've got it's a feel. You should be able to know like how long it generally takes you to get from the top of your mark to when you deliver the ball. Like that's a feel. And the only way that you do that again is by bowling many, many, many deliveries, you know.
Feel like quick through the crease? Or was that a conscious thing that you wanted to be quick through the crease?
Again, it was for me, it was like maybe we didn't have as much technology back when I was growing up. So I picked up a lot of cues on sound, on feel. And one of the things that I always picked up was from Vincent Barnes, who was the South African bowling coach for many years, is he said, I want to hear your feet land like, da-dum, like that. So when I jumped and I got into my gather and I was in the air, I wanted to hear my feet go, da-dum. Then I knew I was hitting the crease really quickly and really, really, really hard. When I'd land, da-dum, then I was spending way too much time on the back leg, you know, like then I was like, ooh, I'm a bit lazy. And I'm trying to make up for that some other way. I'm trying to rip my left arm down to get my body to move quicker or whatever it is. So I use these visual and physical feels as well as sound to know like how I was able to do what I wanted to do. And by having my feet go like that, then I knew I was rocketing through the crease and everything was strong and everything was good.
That's really cool. That's not an easy thing to do, to be that aware of what's going on. Do you know what I mean? That's tough for most mere mortals.
Yeah. I think everybody needs to figure out, like, you got to find out what works for you, you know? And I think if you ask enough questions of people, the answers all lie within, you know? And those are mine that work for me. And they work, they sound very simple for me. And then again, when you translate that to somebody else, they might go, well, I can't do that. So I'm like, okay, cool. So we don't worry about that. Let's try and figure out what works for you, you know? And I mean, I've had many conversations with many people, and then it was just reminding them of those things that worked for them, to be like, and even if you bullshit people, really, like Mornay Morkel used to say he loved it when his left arm would go really high, you know? And then he would be bowling, and I'd just walk over to him and I'd say to him, yeah, Moras, your left arm is working beautifully. And he would just be like, oh yeah, okay, cool. And all of a sudden you'd see him click into another gear, and it would just, so, you know, like it would just be that kind of thing. So once you know what works with people, like, then you can just remind them of those things, and all of a sudden they just slip into that lane, and things start to work out better for them, you know. But you need to know people, and you need to know what works for them, and everyone's got to discover that on their own.
Yeah, like, absolutely. You've just said there about everyone's got their own way of bowling. I posted this clip on our Instagram the other day, and I've posted this because I've seen a lot of bowling coaches out there who promote pace bowling, and they encourage everyone to just have a braced front leg. And I found a clip of yourself side on where you aren't fully braced. You actually did collapse a little bit, but yet you still were able to let go of that ball at serious pace. So with that, and obviously Mornay was he was a slightly collapsed front leg as well. Do you think if you had to coach someone, would you feel the need that they have to have a braced front leg, or would you, well, how would you work with them to try and get pace?
I think the thing is, again, we're all different, you know, and you don't want to change people like too much. So you got to figure out what works for everybody. And clearly you've got a lot of bowlers that have got braced front legs and guys that don't, you know? So again, it's about finding what works for that individual. Something that I tried to do when I was going to the nets was sometimes I had to remind myself about what I did, which was bowling fast. And, like, I had three kind of training ways when I went to the nets. One was like, I wanted to get my skills done, so I want to make sure I'm landing on a good length. I want to get my Yorkers out of the way. I want to get my slow balls. I want to get my bouncers out the way, that kind of thing. The second thing that I'd do when I went to nets was I would have a bit of fun at nets. I'd be like challenging myself. So I'd be like, okay, cool. Talk to the other bowlers that are there. And I'm like, I'm going to try and nick him off to first slip, or I'm going to bowl an in-swinger. We all do that. That for me is the fun side of cricket. And then the third thing that I would do at nets was that I would go to nets sometimes and I'd be like, cool, today I'm just bowling fast. I don't care if the ball hits the side net. It doesn't fucking matter. Today, it's all about pace, because I need to remind my body what it requires to bowl at 150, 145 Ks an hour. Because sometimes we just go to nets and we kind of operate at like 60, 70%. And then when we get into a game, how are we able to bowl at 150 Ks an hour when we're not actually training that? So there would be times when I would do that. And I think when you're trying to find bowlers that can bowl real quick, you need to sometimes go to them and say to them, well, give it to me. Here's the ball. You know, yeah, I want to see it. Like, I don't want you to hit the stumps. I don't want you to hit that beacon. Give me everything you got. And then we try and zone that in and we go, okay, cool. So what I've seen is your head's falling over or your legs braced or whatever it is. Let's try and like just tweak little things here and there. And then let's see if that works. And that's kind of sometimes how I would find cricketers to get the extra yard of pace. So actually say to them, go out there and actually bowl fast. Try and bowl as fast as you can. And then let's see what we can do. Whether it's a brace leg or not, that for me is irrelevant. Like, everyone is their own individual. But yeah, like, sometimes you'll look at a bowler and you'll be like, maybe we need to change this big time, you know? But those are the three things that I would do when I went to nets, like, to make sure that I was able to perform at the highest level at top speeds.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a pretty torrid net session for anyone who's batting in it. to be fair.
It could, and it didn't really matter. I mean, I was bowling to guys like AB, so many, many times I'd be bowling and it would be short and wide and we, and he would cut it and it would be going for six, but that would be irrelevant. You know, that didn't matter. Like the focus was that I needed to remind my body, like, today, this is what you're doing, you know? As much like a rugby player going into a rugby game and never taking a hit of a tackle, you know, and he's in the gym and he's got all the muscle and everything like that. And he walks out into his first rugby game, he gets his first tackle and he can't get up. And, you know, and he's like, oh my God, my body's so sore. It's like, well, you should have taken a few hits before you walked into the game, just so you know what it feels like, so that you're able to get through your 90 minutes or 80 minutes or whatever a rugby game is. Like, I always forget, 80 minutes. And it's the same thing with fast bowling. It's like, well, you can't just bowl six fastballs and think that the rest of the day, the rest of this test match, you can operate at, you know, 130. You're going to get smoked.
I think that's brilliant, because the fact that you've been able to separate, takeaway outcome here, this is about within me making sure my body's getting the most out of this net for effort to make sure I'm still topping up my fastballs. Because you do get a lot of people, I'll do some coaching now, and you do get a lot of people who get caught up in the actual net situation and forget what they're, it could be trying to hit a line in length. And they can do that, but then the batsman who's there hits a good shot and the emotion gets involved. And yep. I must have to take them to a side and like, look, what was the outcome? You got a good line and length. Don't worry about what the batsman did, because actually we're working on just hitting a good area. That's it. Yeah, that's brilliant how you were able to do that.
Yeah, there was many players. I mean, I would bowl a Graham Smith. I knew how good he was off his legs as a left-handed batter, but I knew that he shuffled across to off stump. And, you know, if I got it on middle and off somewhere there and I try to get him to hit me down the ground, that I could get him out LBW. But it wasn't Graham Smith that I was trying to get out LBW. It was Alistair Cook that I was trying to get out LBW. So every time he hit me through mid-wicket, I was like, Biff, what line is that? And he's like, that's middle and off. And I'm like, that's perfect. That's perfect. I don't care if you hit me through mid-wicket. That's fine. I'm not playing against you tomorrow. I'm playing against this other left-hander. So, you know, it's also about knowing who you're playing against and prepping accordingly. But, you know, these are all things that you have to do when you get to that level. You know, when you're younger, you also got to go through the emotional side of things sometimes and get into a scrap or two.
That's amazing, actually. Just the clip I put up of you, it was you and Pat Cummins. Pat Cummins' brace leg, you slightly collapsed. And the last clip of you bowling was getting Alistair Cook swinging back LBW. That's brilliant.
how much prep did you do, Dale? Because obviously your skill set, it works. You know, you're 90 mile an hour and above and you swing it. Did you try and have plans for individual batters, or did you just go with what you do really well and stick to it?
Both. I worked really closely with our video analysts just to know where batters had gotten out, and mostly in their last like 5 to 10 innings. I wanted to know if there was a pattern of play as to where these batters had gotten out, and then I'll try and zone in on those areas for that particular batter. And then also just knowing that like different batters all play the same ball differently. So I knew that Sachin Tendulkar, if I hit a good length that was a top of off stump for Sachin Tendulkar, he would hit me slightly more in front of point. Whereas if I was bowling to, say, Ricky Ponting with the same line and length, he'd hit me more slightly behind point. So it was important for me to know, okay, Sachin's coming in, I need point this side. Or, you know, this guy's coming in, I need mid on to be slightly more wider, or mid off to be slightly more wider, or more in, or whatever it is. So, you know, once you got enough of this information, it all adds to how you can get a guy out, because pressure is one of the biggest things that gets wickets. And, you know, dot balls is so key. So if you've got it like a fielder in the wrong place and you've bowled the perfect ball and he gets off strike, fuck, I'm going to lose my shit, you know, because, but if you got that stuff covered, you might get one or two dot balls that's going to build enough pressure that batter will play a false shot. So I found it was always easier to play against guys that were at the highest level, because there was so much information about them. I found it difficult to play against guys at like club level or first class level, because the guy would walk in and I'd be like, I've never seen this guy before in my life. What does he do? And then you just got to go back to the old top off stump with the odd bouncer kind of plan and hope it works, you know?
That's amazing you just said that. That is Chris's kind of go-to all the time. Yeah. Just top of off. He says it so many times. Top of off, use your banter. That's it.
It's a good starting point.
Yeah, absolutely. But then as you got that covered, you know, you start to figure out where different batters hit those type of balls, you know, and then you want to cover those areas. Steve Smith was a classic, you know, gets so far across. You want to, I can't think of it right now, but he'll have a different feel to a Manus Labuschagne, for example, but the same ball, exactly the same ball. So that's, those are the key things that I would be, I'll try and zone in on.
We have the issue now with the English county season starting, where our analysts will give us all the data on where the batsmen hit it. But obviously they've been working on their weaknesses for 6 months and no one's seen them. So you bowl in a specific place thinking, oh, that's great. And all of a sudden they've learned a new shot in the last 6 months. And we, you know, you look a bit silly. But, you know, it's not the end of the world.
It happens every IPL. Don't worry. You'll see a new player come out and you're like, bowl, yeah. And the first ball you bowl, he plays a flipping reverse lap and it goes for six over fine leg or something. You're like, when did he learn that shot? Like, what the hell?
Plan out the window. Yeah.
So you well, actually, I'll ask this first. You mentioned the bowl you picked things from, which was, you know, there was Alan Donald, quite aggressive bowler, Brett Lee, Shoaib Akhtar. You looked like the way you bowled was quite aggressive. Even the stare you would give batsmen, is that something that it was deliberate, or did you not see red mist, but were you kind of switched on? I'm ready for battle here.
A bit of both. I found it started in the dressing room. Like that was the key thing for me. The moment I put the jersey on was like putting on my Superman suit or my Batman suit or whatever it was. I was like, now I'm going into character of being a fast bowler. Mm-hmm. And I need to play out all those characteristics of this particular character. So if it means that today I'm going to have to be a little bit of a savage, like a little bit of a dick towards the opposition to get the best out of it, then I'm going to play that part. I'm obviously not going to cross the line, but I'm going to play that part. I don't want to be somebody that someone wants to face. I don't want to be someone that somebody wants to be like, oh, this guy's okay. I want to be feared. I want guys to not want to speak to me and how do you do that? You know, and I think there's many people that you can copy and people that you can steal things from. I thought Shane Warne was probably the best at it, and he was a spinner. You know, like he was very smart with his mouth. He was very aggressive, but I maybe across the line at times. But like I felt like I wanted that of what Warne had. I wanted to add that to my game, and he wasn't a fast bowler at all. But I wanted to put all of that together so that I could create this character, this beast that teams would have to play against. And when they were doing their prep the night before, they'd be like, be careful of this. And these are all my strengths that I have to work on, you know, all the time. And then there's a part of you that is red mist. I mean, we've all got a bit of it. You have to. But yeah, a lot of it was just trickery, really, and playing the part, you know, like trying to be a good actor. When you're playing test matches, it's really difficult. You know, your body is aching, your body is sore, you're going through it, it's 5 days. You don't want to give the opposition a sniff, you know. So a lot of it is faked. You walk out there pretending nothing's paining, unless you're Andre Russell, for example. He pretends everything's sore and he still hits sixes. Like that's his thing. He's a, you know, I was the other way around. I was like, I'm not showing any pain. I'm not giving them an inch. I'm not showing them that I'm frustrated. You know, these are the goals that you kind of work for.
Yeah, it's like almost getting into character, isn't it? Basically, it can help you. I think Chris does his own thing. I'm a bit different, but I'd like to not be able to be. I don't like people being able to read me when I'm bowling.
Yeah,
know what I'm about. So yeah, I do get that. And actually, just talk about red mist and whatnot. I was told this. I did ask for any information of someone who played with you, Jim Troughton. You were playing against Sussex from Warwickshire, and Mushtaq Ahmed was having a bit of a swipe and edged you over, slip for four. And I think your words were, don't make me hurt you, old man. And then next ball, pole's gone. That's one of the most intimidating things I think, especially an old guy can hear who's got a bat in hand.
Well, mostly he was old at that point. Yeah, I actually do remember that.
And we got one little, I don't know if you remember this, this was Warwickshire versus Surrey. Just have a listen to this, see if you can remember the actual incident itself. See, going back quite a while now, but...
Yeah,
I remember the situation where Surrey were playing Warwickshire, and it was quite an even sort of contest. I remember Dale Steyn coming in, and I was bowling, and it was back in the day, I had a little bit of pace. And was running in and bowling short and stuff like that at Dale, and he sort of looked at me and was like, "You're so dumb, if you bowl at the stumps, you'll probably get me out." And I was like, "Well, I'm not trying to get you out." The thing that I didn't sort of take into the equation was Dale was a lot quicker than me and a world-class bowler, and I was like, "Oh no, I've got back again next." But thankfully, the lads for Surrey were batting, and I didn't have to go out and face him. Otherwise, it could have been an interesting affair. But unbelievable bowler. Just someone that you always looked up to. The way he bowled with skill and pace. Put the ball in the right areas all the time. And obviously, that's why he had such a fantastic international career and a great competitor.
Do you remember that game at all?
Is that Ricky?
It is Ricky. Oh, no. Oh, there he is.
Hang on, we've got him back.
It is Ricky Clark, yes.
Yeah. Guys, I remember that very well. Hey? And actually, if you go back and check, I think I got 50 in that game. I was batting two. Yeah. One of the spinners, because he was bouncing the shit out of me. And I was like, all right, cool. And I somehow survived. And one of the spinners was bowling. I was like, this is my only opportunity that I'm going to score run. Smoke that poor spinner. I think it was my second first class 50 that I ever got. I only think I got four or three. That was one of them. But I remember it really well. I can't remember what happened in the game. I think it was a draw. It was a long time ago, like 2007 or something. But yeah, I do remember getting 50 in that game batting. And it was just because I was being bombed left, right, and center. And as soon as the spinner came on, I was like, yeah, it's my chance.
Did you find you got a lot of that or not when you batted? Or were people generally sensible and pitch it up?
No. Guys wanted to break my hands all the time. And at the highest level, I think Johnson hit me on the head 6 times, from what I can remember. Yeah. He broke. I think he broke 4 or 5 helmets off mine. Hit me on the head 6 times. That's what, that I know. And it was just every time I went out to bat, it got to a point where when I would go to net to practice, I didn't even want to face net bowlers because our net bowlers would get smoked by De Villiers, Hashim, you know, Du Plessis. That when the net bowlers were bowling to me, they were like, now's our time to shine. You know, we're going to give this guy a couple short ones. And I'm like, fuck. I'm the guy who can't handle it. And now you want to bowl me bounces. So eventually I just quit batting completely. I was like, I don't even want to go to nets and bat anymore because it was just, it got ridiculous for me. And I was like, I'm going to die. So I'm out. Like, I'm
done. It's horrible. Batting in the nets. You're all enclosed, aren't you? Yeah. You know what I mean? Oh,
terrible. Yeah, terrible.
I'm guessing people obviously did that to you because they knew even if they pitched it up, they were going to get some themselves. So they thought probably try and dish it out now before it comes back.
100%. Yeah, 100%. And there was a time when we played against Australia, South Africa played against Australia, and they had some real quicks. They had Brett Lee, Mitchell Johnson. Peter Siddle was bowling wheels back then. Who else was there? There was a bunch of different guys. And these series, is we'd be playing them in South Africa and in Australia, where there was a little bit in the pitches. It wasn't nice. I can promise you, walking out to bat there, knowing that these guys, all they wanted to do was break your hand so they can get you out of the series or hurt you to get you out of the series. It wasn't comfortable. So I knew that when it was my turn to bowl to them, I was like, I'm going to try and take them down. Like, same thing.
So how would you generally bowl at the lower order then? Because this is a common issue, isn't it, teams have with mopping up tails and stuff like that. Would you use your short ball more, or would you just generally stick with what gets the top order out?
A bit of both. Like, use your mouth, use your mind. Tell them it's coming, and then don't do it. Because I was the kind of bowler that, yeah, there was times that I wanted to take cleaner guys. I wanted to hurt a guy sometimes, you know, like I had that ability. They would be annoying me, or the series would get to a point where I'm like, this guy's had too much to say and I'm going to come at him, you know, like that's just how the game works. Much like a batter is like, this bowler's been on me. I'm going to clean him up now. I'm going to smack him now. But I wanted wickets in the wickets column. That's the most that I wanted. That's the only way that I thought was the best way of getting these guys, was to get them out. So I would use fear tactics, but I would be more interested in getting them out. So the quicker I could get them out, and I figured what would work for the top order worked for the lower order. So just slightly straighter line. That's all.
Nice. Yeah, subtle. It's amazing how often actually you come in at, I say, lunch or something like that, and there's always this issue, lads, we've got to do something to get the tail out or whatever, and there's a bit of a wag and stuff, and everyone comes up with lots of funky plans, and like you say, they're just, obviously you've got pace and stuff, but a bit straighter, threat of a short ball, and that's enough.
You should do the trick, yeah.
You
can come around the wicket and bomb guys too. You know, I had Daryl Cullinan. He was my captain at Titans in my second year of first class cricket, and he probably had a little bit of a vendetta against many players that were still playing. He was retiring, and he was like, he wanted to get to guys, and I was 20, so he was like, well, he has my fast bowler, I'm going to use this guy. So as soon as the team was about six down, he'd be like, you're coming around the wicket and you bowl short, and that's how we get the guys out. You'd bowl short balls around the wicket, leg side field, nobody up, and say good luck, you know. And I did it, and it helped me, because when I went to international cricket and I found that things were going really dead and we weren't able to take a wicket, and we'd have these like 15 over lull periods where nothing was happening, I was like, cool, I'm coming around the wicket here and I'm coming short and hard and fast for two or three overs, and then come back over the wicket and you bowl a length ball, and the one that he was leaving, all of a sudden his feet's a little bit more in the toilet, and nick, and you've created something. Neil Wagner was really good at that. But that's something that we did regularly, you know, all the time, really.
Did you ever do much night watchman during your career?
I did. I was a bloody night watchman. I think my test average went from 18 to about 11 being the night watchman. So I chowed up a lot of balls, but I wasn't scoring runs. And then I was like, guys, I'm done. Seriously, you're starting to make me look like an idiot here, you know? Like I'm out of this. And then I just stopped the slot.
It's the worst job.
No, horrible. Horrible. Average dropped. I was like, bugger this. This is terrible.
I found normally, let's say I did a night watchman and then I come in the following morning, having done the job the night before, you get about 20 minutes grace where you get normal areas bowled at you before it's round the wicket and a bit of pepper pot and stuff like that, which isn't too much fun.
I got about two balls, really. I remember at Lord's, I went out there and was like, managed to make it through the night with Hashim Amla. I was on strike first thing the next morning. And Stuart Broad was round the wicket first over. I was like, are you kidding me? And it was like three balls bumped up court. I was like, no, man. You know? Yeah.
Brilliant.
I was going to ask. So just obviously you're a coach now, and you've been doing that since you finished. What would you look for in a young bowler, for a young bowler? And think, you know what, that's a good asset to have that could help them get to that next level. What things would you look for?
I mean, this might come across really bad, but I like the mental side of things. Like, I think when you find kids that don't, this might not sound right, but when you find kids that don't whinge that much, like that are able to handle the bad things, and they're able to move on from that quickly, I feel like they're gonna go a lot faster, a lot quicker. I find that kids that think that things should come easier for them and everything, that's gonna take them a little bit longer. So the attitude is massive for me. Obviously, I'm looking at kids that are already pretty good. To be fair, you know, like I'm coaching teams that have got really, really good cricketers. So this, I'm not talking about schools cricket that I'm looking for the next kid or something like that. So you're looking at guys that have got the right attitude. Generally, those guys are the guys that that seem to figure things out quicker and are able to take in the information that you give them and use it rather than it sits with them for a lot longer. So attitude is massive. But then when you're obviously looking at a cricket skills thing, if he looks good on the eye, if there's pace coming out the hand, if there's swing, if there's something to work with, then you can identify somebody that you can work with, you know, someone that you can take seriously.
That's class. And if we take you back to the start of our chat today, if you now were starting your career again, what current bowlers around the world might you try and copy at the minute?
Okay, no particular order. Mark Wood, for just pace, I think he's got absolute gas. Pat Cummins, from the mental attitude, the way that he operates, he just seems like he's gold, you know. KG Rabada, for attitude and physicality, as well as action. Like those are three that are off the top of my mark. And then if you can get somebody who's got Mohammed Shami's wrist, you're styling. You know, you put that all together and you've got yourself a pretty good bowler. You've got great run up, you've got great mental, you've got great pace, you've got great skill. I mean, these are guys, and you know, the nice thing about being a cricket coach or a fast bowler lover, like I love fast bowling. Things change all the time, you know. Like next month, like I'll be crushing hard on Lockie Ferguson, you know, or Trent Bolt, you know. And then, and then, like a week later, I'm like, I'm done with those guys, you know. Starkey, you're back into it, you know. Like I'm a big fan of the game, and not generally like on how well somebody is doing, but like I identify like particular moments that I really enjoy, and I watch them do one small moment, and I'm like, yes. Yes, that there. Not many people will notice it, and it doesn't need to be a particular thing. But I'm like, yeah, like then I'll crush on that one thing, and I'm like, yeah, I'll write that down, and I'm like, yes, that out. Next time I see him, I'm gonna say, do you remember doing that? He probably won't even remember doing it. It's just a natural thing. But I'm like, yes, you know. And then I'll crush on that guy, and I'll watch him, and see if it is part of his game, if it was a fluke or whatever it is. But I'm a big fan of fast bowlers, like overall. So. I'm always watching the guys, yeah. And it changes all the time, you know.
That's interesting. Class. If you had one bowler that you could have in your team, the international team, as of right now that's currently playing, who would that be?
Wow. Your all-round package, Marco Jansen, is like, he's a weapon. He needs to sort his shit out a little bit. He's starting to, like, relax a little bit about things, but the guy is like he's so tall, but he's left arm, which is unique. He swings the ball, which is great. So he's picked up poles in India. I watch him take wickets there. I watch him in South Africa take wickets. And then he's an all-round cricketer. You know, he's got great hands. He can catch anywhere and he can bat. But I think from a bowling point, He's a very easy run-up. It's easy on the eye. But, yeah, he needs to pull his finger out of his arse sometimes, because sometimes he just like, hovers over yeah when he could be operating yeah, you know. But Marco Jansen is somebody that I'm like, yeah, we can work with that guy, you know, for a long time. He's 23 too, so.
Oh, wow.
Just with that, if you were still playing, do you think, well, basically, if there was someone in that team he's in now to get him to pull his finger out, do you think that would help? So if there's someone like yourself now saying, no, that's not good enough, don't settle, you've got a higher ceiling, and you were not crack the whip, but you were quite harsh, do you reckon that would help him more?
I mean, I think it's very important to know the individual that you're dealing with and how to approach them. Marco and myself have got a pretty good relationship, so I can literally walk up to him and say to him, listen, yeah, you're lagging, yeah, my boy, like you're way better, you know, much the same way that Quinton de Kock and myself have the same relationship, much the same way that Mark Boucher and Paul Harris had the same relationship with me. They would walk over to me and they would say to me, listen, dude, what are you doing? Like, you are bowling powder puff, sort it out. And like, it would get heated, but they would get what I could do, you know? And I've got the same kind of relationship with Mark Janssen. So like, if I was playing, certainly I would be putting it up him the whole time, be like, come on. Like, this is shit. You can do much better than that.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. What do you think, Keith? We've kept Dale for about an hour. I think we're nearly at the
to an hour now, isn't it? Well, I could go on, carry on, but you've got things to do, and I'm just
I'm sitting at home. I'm the only thing I got to do is order Uber Eats. That's about it.
Sounds good. Nah, it's been a pleasure to have you on. Yeah. To be fair, the same as Kyle Abbott. I feel like I want to go and bowl now immediately. And you know what I mean? Get in the net. You've got me excited.
I'm not even gonna lie. I've got a group of guys. I surf and I live in a small surf town now in Cape Town. And a bunch of guys, they're absolutely useless. Like, they are useless. And every Tuesday, 10 o'clock in the morning, there's an indoor net facility down the road here from my house here. And we meet and we go and hit balls and we bowl and everything like that. And they are village. You think village cricket. You think this is what we deal with. And I do that every Tuesday because it's pretty fun. And I'm pretty amped tomorrow to go and bowl and fuck them up. I'm not lying.
Yeah, you can feel the passion through the screen.
Do you still get it down there? Pretty sure. Garrett, I'm pretty sure you do.
No, when I did my shoulder, my shoulder is absolutely fine, but my pec, it never really had that elasticity that it used to have. So it's like, it sits pretty tight like that. So if I try and bowl too quickly, those fibers tear and then I get a bit of a pec problem. So I've really got to stretch it out to be able to bowl. But yeah, I mean, physically, I'm absolutely fine. I think if you gave me a month, I could do 130, 135, no problem. Yeah. But I don't want to. That's the thing. I don't want to. I don't want to go to Nets.
There was when I first signed for Warwickshire, Alan Donald just become first team coach, I think. And he had to, I think he played a second team game the year before. And he only played because the 12th man couldn't make it or something and someone got injured. So he actually ended up bowling in trainers. And he's just run up, he's quite stiff, isn't he, AD? And he just got it down there as he got a great wrist and nicked off one of the batsmen, dropped at second slip.
Oh, no.
Yeah. AD being AD, top of his voice, lost it totally. Next ball, bouncer, smashed the guy off the lid. Everyone's in shock. And then he shouted out, because no one moved, "Get the fucking ball." He was so angry from a drop catch. Yeah.
AD, what a legend. I absolutely loved him. That was the other thing, is having him as a coach, he didn't have to coach anything for me. What do you coach? I'm the Sunrisers bowling coach. What am I going to coach Pat Cummins? There's nothing that I can tell this guy that he has not. He's won the World Cup. I didn't win a World Cup. Fuck. The guy knows how to bowl, you know? But it's what can I do to make him perform just a little bit better, or to maintain that level that he levels at? And that's what AD did for me. He didn't come there and say, "Oh, your wrist, you got to do this, you got to do that." He would just tell me stories and I'd be frothing in the dressing room. I'm okay, I'm a beast. I'm get me out there now, I want to go, you know, I need to go now, you know. And it would be a 2-minute story at tea, and after tea I'll just clean the team up, whoever it is that we're playing against, you know. And that was that's what I found AD was really good for me. And then other bowlers, he obviously helped him technically, but that's he identified what worked from his skill set to work for me to get the best out of me. And as a coach, I try and do that with all the guys that I work with. I'm how am I going to help you to achieve the best version of yourself, you know? But AD was great. I loved him. It was amazing.
That's brilliant. Dale, thank you so much for your time. This has been absolutely amazing.
You're welcome, guys.
I'm sure we'd love to have you on again. If it was maybe, I don't know, World Cup, chat about the World Cup before it happens, you can give us some insight to what you will know from what we would be aware of.
Guys, give me a shout. The World Cup is around the corner, and I've actually got the rest of the year off, which is great. I'm going to do a little bit of commentary for Star, all remote, and then I might go to the World Cup. But, you know, if you want to give us a shout whilst, if I do go, I mean, we can have a shout whilst we're there, because they're going to be playing in America, New York. Those are going to be pretty foreign conditions, you know, for all the bowlers. I think it's going to be unique watching. How those pitches are going to play and everything. And it will be well worth a shout and a chat as to say what's happening, what are the wickets doing, what's working, what isn't working. And, you know, you might find that the teams that adapt best to those conditions there are going to be, won't necessarily be the best team in the tournament, but it might be the best adaptable team that wins So it would be worth it, worth the conversation if you want. I'm happy to do that.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
Yeah. just jinx you. No, that'd be class. Well, look, I will play the exit tune. Thanks again, Dale. And yeah, wish you all the best. Take it easy.
Cheers, guys. Thanks so much.
Cheers. Thank you.